Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is a preview of our first live streamed episode for members of our new The Rest is History Club. To access the full episode, go to restishistorypod.com. restishistorypod.com.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Dominic, that of course was Bob Dylan.
Richard Nixon.
It was Bob Dylan. Blowing in the Wind. And he, of course, is the great troubadour of the 60s, which is the subject for this, our first members live event. Dominic, I'm sure you'll join with me in saying a huge thank you and a welcome to everyone who has joined us.
I will do. But before I welcome the audience, I will just say, even by your own standards, that was a truly remarkable impersonation. I hope you'll be giving us some more Bob Dylan.
No, that's very kind. Thank you.
Later in the show. So, yes, this is very exciting for us. We never expected so many people to sign up. So we sort of thought we'd be doing it to, you know, three men and a dog. And it's amazing, actually, Tom, to see the chat. So we've got the chat window open and we can see Louise from Stockholm, Samuel from a place called Bumpass, Virginia. Well, maybe it doesn't quite have the same connotations
Jeanette
in America.
Cock from the state of Washington.
Amy from Ohio.
Friedrich from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Decoy 005 from sunny Leeds. Aidan Kelly from Kiora. So anyway, lots of people. Thanks so much for joining us. And Dominic, I guess that rendition of Blown in the Wind, which I thought was superb.
Yeah, of course you did.
I mean, that kind of sums up the way that people see the 60s today, an age of liberation, of freedom, of wind blowing away atrophied, old-fashioned structures. And I know that it's it's a take on the 60s that you don't necessarily agree with, do you?
Well, not everybody sees the 60s that way. So the 60s have always been contested ever since they happened. And actually, there's no really agreed definition of what the 60s were, Tom, because nobody thinks the 60s began on the 1st of January 1960 and ended on the 31st of December 1969. And obviously, the period has different connotations in the US, in Britain, in Europe. I mean, beyond Europe, you know, in Eastern Europe, in China, the 60s means something completely different. So yeah. I guess one of the things we'll be untangling is whether we're talking about this period, roughly from 1960 to 1970, or we're talking about a sort of phenomenon of individualism, liberation, some people would say, of fragmentation. Who knows? I mean, we're going to unpack all that, aren't we?
Should we kick off with a question?
We will. Yeah.
And we have a very good question from Mark Kirk, Are the 60s a real break with the past, or just the climax of something that started earlier?
What's a great thing about this, Tom, is that it's our very first one, and the question that appeared on screen was not the same as the question you read out. So we've started with precisely the degree of professionalism that people expect. So the question that you asked, are the 60s a real break with the past, or the climax of something that started earlier? I would say it's a continuation of trends that were there before the Second World War and had actually been interrupted by the war and by the austerity that followed it. So if you take, 60s, everybody equates with youth culture. Youth culture was there in embryo in the 1930s. Teenagers is a 1930s term. The kind of marketing world that creates the youth culture.
It's an American term, right?
Yeah, it's an American term.
So that's also a crucial part of it.
Yes.
It's a kind of an important punctuation mark in the process of Americanization as much as anything else.
It is, but it's not just that. So I think it's also if you were being very Marxist about it, Tom, which you know I love to be, you could say a stage in the development of capitalism and of consumer culture, which I think would have happened earlier had it not been for the war. The 60s is also, there's so much sort of tangled up. There's race and gender, there's kind of sexual liberation, there's decolonization, there's the Cold War. So it's clearly not one thing. And actually, one of the funny things about talking about the 60s is normally two different people don't mean the same thing when they talk about it. So I guess you and I probably don't understand the 60s because you probably think of it in terms of, I'm not going to prejudge you, Tom, but I think the C word is going to come up. Whereas yes. I think the 60s is created largely by economics. But yeah, I don't think it's a break. I don't think it's a break at all.
Yeah, I think it's one of the... I think that it is one of the great revolutionary decades in the history of what was once Christendom. And I think it's up there with the...
Yes,
with the,
yes.
I think it's up there with. I think it's up there with the 1520s. Uh-huh. I think it's up there with the 1790s.
Yeah.
As a time where deep-seated cultural trends that essentially are bred of Christian Europe evolve and have a kind of massive growth spurt.
Yes.
And I think that is the overarching context. But I completely agree that obviously there are all kinds of factors that go into that process, of which the economy, all kinds of things like that are absolutely a part. And I do also think that a really key role is that the 60s is where people, a generation is emerging that had not fought in the war.
Yeah.
But I think that the understanding of the war is really fundamental to it. And I remember when I was getting into the Beatles when I was 10. So that was 1978. And the Second World War and the 60s seemed unimaginably apart. Completely separate.
Of course.
But now, with the benefit of my many years, it seems really obvious that the 60s is a kind, it exists in the context of the previous generation and as a reaction against a lot that the war had represented.
Well, obviously, there are lots of people around in the 60s who remember the war, who are shaped by the war. So almost all the politicians have been involved in the war, in the war period, in one way or another. Obviously, de Gaulle... John F. Kennedy served in the war. Nixon served in the war in Britain. You've got the young generation like Dennis Healey and Roy Jenkins. They're all shaped by the war. But you're right that there's a generation who are maybe, let's say, in their 20s, who are... Well, in Britain and America, I think they're probably... Particularly in Britain, actually, they're sick of the war and sick of the hearing about it. And there's a definite reaction against it. It's different, isn't it, in Europe, say in West Germany, for example.
Well, they're really sick of the war.
yes. But there, so we talked in our German Chancellor's podcast, remember the Adenauer to Angela, we talked about Kurt Kiesinger and all these kinds of characters in the 60s in Germany who had a lot of them had quite dubious war records. And then you get the reaction later on, late 60s and 70s, against them and a feeling that West Germany hasn't yet sort of wrestled sufficiently with its kind of Nazi past. So, I think the war is there. I think the war, where they are, the 60s now look closer to the war than they did 20 years ago. I don't think we inevitably and automatically divide up post-war history into these completely distinct chunks in the way that we did before. So there's more kind of continuity
I still think that the 60s...
You think it's a big reaction?
They are a kind of self-contained.
You do?
I do. Yeah, I do. And I think also a further... a reason why the 60s, even while it's been, people are living through it, feels very self-consciously new and keen to reject much of what had gone before, is the fact that the Second World War has given birth to the Cold War.
Yeah.
And there is... this is the first generation that is growing up with the consciousness that the entire world could be annihilated.
So this Cuban Missile Crisis, obviously, October 1962. I suppose some people would say the moment that the world comes closest to World War III. I have a very, slightly sceptical attitude to a lot of this, because a lot of people say, well, life in the 60s is completely overshadowed by the bomb. And by CND in Britain.
It's not completely overshadowed, is it? But I mean, it's a kind of nagging anxiety at the back of the mind that had not previously existed.
Well, it existed in the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely existed in the 50s. And I think it's also, there's always a danger. I mean, you know my views on the 60s. You know that I think there's always a danger of reducing it too much to the sort of concerns of the Tom Hollands of this world. And that the horny-handed sons and daughters of toil,
the Sandbrooks,
their concerns are sometimes neglected. And I think there's definitely particular people who are very fixated on the fear of nuclear Armageddon, but they don't necessarily speak for the entire... I mean, most people are just kind of putting out the bins, aren't they? They're just kind of getting on with life.
They are. They are. But in a sense, the kind of the clinging to normality is precisely the response to it, you could say.
Well, or it could just be being normal. I mean, you're...
Yeah, but I think that normality, you know.
So that is the start of our live episode on the 1960s, and it only gets better and better. To listen to the full thing, join the club, www.restishistorypod.com, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.